Alrighty, good evening, everyone. Happy Tuesday, and to those of you who had a long weekend, welcome back from your long weekend. This is Jeff in New Jersey. This is Moving Train Radio. Our phone number is 347-850-8445 if you want to call in. I've got my co-hosts are on a vacation this week in New Orleans, and seem to be having a good time so far from the pictures and that I've seen, taking in the history and the culture. Tonight I have we have a frequent, one of our favorite, probably our favorite frequent caller, Dave from Massachusetts. Dave, I don't know Dave personally, but I feel like I do. We have a couple of mutual friends. We know each other in the Facebook sense and from talking on lots of these shows. So what I want to do is I've always wanted to do, like, one of the things I've always regretted is that I didn't talk to my grandparents enough or record them or write down things that they had to say when we used to talk about things that happened in history. So what I'd like to do is talk to various people and create an oral history project. And I call this Living History. And I did not get a cease and desist from Hillary Clinton's camp. So either she doesn't mind me lifting her book title, or she's not paying attention to us. But maybe someday she will. So I'm going to introduce my guest. His name is Dave Hamilton. He currently lives in the Boston, Massachusetts area. He's semi-retired. He has an interesting background, which I'd like to learn more about. And I'm going to turn over to you, Dave, to give us a brief bio of yourself, and then we'll take it from there.
No, thanks, Jeff. I can repeat the things that were written the last day or so, but though by temperament and views, I seem very much an East Coast guy for the past 40 years, I guess, close to 50 years. I was actually born in the Midwest, but lived overseas in Asia both as a child and an adult. And I do think that has shaped my my world views, my views in general. And as the second time I lived overseas, I was married with young children. I think it shaped my kids' views as well, and both, I think, in a positive way. As Jeff mentioned, you know, I'm semi-retired. I just turned 67 years old. I always say I had my kids relatively late. I got a boy 31 and a girl 27, who are both public school teachers. And I'm very, very proud, very pleased with, you know, what they're doing. I don't know what a good place to start on different views. Like Jeff mentioned, you know, wish he talked more to his grandparents. When he said that, I kind of have the opposite view, that I really wish, my own parents were around now to get their impressions of things that are happening now. My parents were both, and my mother maybe more so, Republicans more than Democrats, but, you know, I can't see them being anywhere near the extremes we've seen from the right today. I mean, some of the things that you get to, like racism, I mean, I think I was I was like raised from the beginning without any at all. I mean, my mother, I don't know if she told me this when she was little, I remember saying it later. We lived in southern Indiana. It was right on the Kentucky and the Illinois border. And, you know, it wasn't suburban Chicago. It was 300 miles away. And, like, attitudes were, you know, somewhat southern. My mother, and the black people by no means had to sit on the back in the back of the bus. It wasn't like that. But my mother, she was always skinny. She weighed, like 5'6", 5'7", barely weighed 100 pounds. She said anytime she got in a crowded bus and there wasn't a seat, she'd look in the back row where you used to have like seats like 5 or 6 across instead of like 2x2. And she'd look for a black person and go sit next to them because nobody else had ever wanted to sit that close. So, I mean, that, and, you know, I don't know, maybe that's became part of me. That very, like, positive influence in my life. Another thing that she told me about once much later, I was in grade school. There was this city about 150,000 people. It's called Evansville. And we lived kind of on the east side of town. The neighborhood was all white. But I went to grade school downtown because I was like a week too young to be in the first grade. My mother wanted me to send me. So we went to the cathedral school, which was kind of dying in the center of town. I had one friend I was especially friendly with, another white kid. And he and I also had a black friend. I won't say the kid was close to me at all, but he, you know, was a friend. And then the white kid used to come out to my neighborhood once in a while on Saturday. And one time, like, the black kid was supposed to come too. And then, like, the last minute, his mother said he couldn't come. My mother told me later that she was somewhat relieved because she would have thought it wouldn't go down well in the neighborhood, but there's no way in hell she would have said that the kid couldn't come. And then she said to me, she always wondered if perhaps his mother kind of thought the same thing, you know, that didn't want to cause trouble. But that kind of stuff is, you know, long. Well, to me, it's long gone, and some people it's not. But I don't know if anybody else has, you know, any, like, thoughts on how, you know, their views on race and that evolves from their family.
Yeah, I grew up in a house where, my father was about the farthest from, and still is, farthest from racist that I knew. He never used the N word. He never judged or disliked anybody. He even hated the word hate. Like, we weren't allowed to say the word hate. Like, I hate this. You know. On the other side, my mom's side of the family was more expressive. You know, the N word was bandied about in my house by my mother and in my grandparents' house, and it was just something that, you know, it was just an attitude that people had. I didn't know that many black people growing up, and most white kids don't. I never met a Jew until I was 10 years old and we moved to a different town, and that person is now still one of my best friends 50 years later.
That speaks more somewhat to the past, I think, than, you know, to the anywhere near present, you know, because in a joking way, you said, you know, you didn't know any Jewish people. You know, and I come back with, damn it, you grew up in New Jersey, for God's sake. But, I mean, that could show how maybe, like, segregated individual towns were at the time, you know.
Absolutely. The town I lived in was predominantly predominantly that I lived in up until 1967 was predominantly Irish town. Lots of big families with, you know, lots of, you know, with, you know, almost, you know, 10 kids or close to 10 kids.
Now that wasn't Catholic that church. Wasn't Jersey City itself, right?
No, this was Richfield Park.
Okay.
I was born in Jersey City. My parents had an apartment in North Bergen, which is just a few miles north of Jersey City. And then when I was about 3, they bought their first house in Richfield Park, which is across the river from Hackensack. Everybody, if they don't know where Hackensack is, they have at least heard of it. We're Richfield Park is the last exit on the New Jersey Turnpike, exit 18. The Catholic Church was, you know, one of the largest buildings in town, and we were considered odd because my mother was of Italian extract. There weren't that many Italians, even though I didn't have an Italian name. That's probably how I got by. But I find myself, the older I find so many people, the older they get, the more conservative they get. And the older I get, the more liberal I get. And I don't know what your evolution was, Dave, but there's not a whole lot of people in your bracket that I know of that have the progressive type views that you have.
I think some of it gets to, you know, a number of us, you know, turned left or became more left, you know, during the Vietnam Troubles or the Civil Rights era, and then it stuck with some of us, and then some of us, I guess, you know, reverted back, so to speak. I mean, I joked in that biography. Now, the reason I said Goldwater Girl is because that seems to be a term like Hillary Clinton or something, and Goldwater Boy wasn't. But, I mean, you know, my mother, who, you know, you'll tell by me talking, was, you know, a big influence in my life, you know, was really big, and I think even did some somewhat campaigning for Goldwater. You know, at the same time, you know, there's always dichotomies in people's lives, and it's the same. You know, I mean, Goldwater voted against the Civil Rights Act in 64 because he thought it was wrong somehow constitutionally. I mean, I still think Barry Goldwater probably wasn't individually a racist. And the fact that later in his later years he said that every good Christian should kick Jerry Falwell in the ass, you know, proved somewhat, you know, what kind of mind the guy really had. Then my mother, who could always, like, put things to a true but maybe a harsh light, she said with Goldwater, you know, she goes, half the people wouldn't vote for him because they thought he was Jewish, and then the other half wouldn't vote for him because he turned away from being Jewish. And that's one of those kind of things that happen in life. But Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not, you know, my early memories are, you know, obviously JFK assassination as a historical event loomed very large. It was a big game changer, you know, for me. Anything before that, I was too young to know that it was a thing, like the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Bay of Pigs, the Eisenhower, even though I was born during the Eisenhower presidency, I don't remember anything about him.
Well, one thing I do remember, it never got huge for me, but if you want to go back into the 50s, there really were, you know, families, some places, you know, building bomb shelters. I mean, some people in the 50s, and maybe they were right. Maybe there was more of a threat than there was now. But, I mean, some people would talk about, you know, a real threat of nuclear war and something, you know, you should be scared or maybe guard against on a daily basis. I think my mindset, even as a 10 or 12 year old, is, you know, pretty much the same as today, that, you know, you can't really fret that much about something you do nothing about. I mean, there's no way I personally am going to stop nuclear war. But that was an image, you know, pre-Kennedy assassination, pre-civil rights. And the other thing I remember talking to our mutual friend Tom Henahan about this, is some of the brainwashing I got in school. And this was actually in the Philippines, but it was an American school, and 85 to 90% of the kids in the class were the American expat kids, you know, with some other nationalities there. And I remember, like, we used to, like, for current events and stuff, you know, like, laugh at, you know, how stupid Khrushchev was and beating his shoe and stuff like that, and kind of, like, you know, making fun of him as, you know, even though they were the enemy, they were, like, the stupid enemy. I mean, that kind of stayed with me later.
Yeah. So you were doing the math, you were in high school during the 1964 campaign, right?
During the 64 campaign, yeah. It would have been it would have been in November of my senior year. Yeah, so I would have been, yeah.
So
the fall of
did
my
anybody,
senior year.
Did anybody, any adults in your life, history teachers, social study teachers, parents, aunts, uncles, did anybody Goldwater philosophy was going to come back with a vengeance and take over in the form of Ronald Reagan? Maybe not they may not have predicted Ronald Reagan at the time, but did anybody say Goldwater's right? He got beat this time, but, you know, he'll be back, or his ideology is going to
kind of remembering the something being so bad it kind of went away and stuff. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Goldwater's right, because one of the big political slogans, you know, was it, you know, in your heart, you know he's right. And the other Goldwater thing, which I don't know why it gets labeled as a right-wing view, but, you know, you still won't find me arguing with, you know, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice and moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. I mean, you could turn that into a motto for the civil rights movement if you want. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, just, you know, I mean, but I mean, that was him. But no, I think, you know, it kind of faded. I don't think Nixon pretty much, separated himself, divorced himself from Goldwater. Romney, who ran in 68, you know, Romney's dad, was a early Midwestern liberal Republican anyway. But no, I think they pretty much ran from Goldwater. But, you know, he came back.
It's interesting.
Great.
I always think about 1968. How old was I? Maybe sixth grade, seventh grade.
Yeah, I mean, I was 20. I was a junior. The riot was between my junior and senior year in college.
It was a year, like, it was a year that, you know, a kid like me really thought the world was going to come to an end. You know, first, the president announces he's not running for re-election. Martin Luther King was shot, who I really didn't know a whole lot about, but I did know, you know, I did know that it was a big deal. You know? They didn't teach us in school a whole lot about it. But, you know, we didn't really learn about the civil rights movement as it was happening in real time. We didn't study current events like that. Bobby Kennedy being shot, then the riots, and then the Democratic Convention, and the Chicago 7, and it all ended with the most improbable thing that anybody, if anybody 5 years earlier, if you put them in a time capsule and transported them to November 1968 and they saw that Richard Nixon was the president, they would say, what planet am I on? So I think the real big story of that year was the comeback of Nixon and how much he dominated the political landscape for.
I have a personal view on this. I won't blame this individual because he wasn't the only person, but the four of us lived in a house the night of the 68 presidential election. Myself and the roommate friend I stayed closest with for the last 40 years were too young to vote. He was a December baby. I was a January one. The fourth guy was kind of non-political. And the third guy, who was very similar to us, voted, early voted or absentee voted, for Dick Gregory, who was running as a protest candidate. And then we watched the returns, and in that day, they didn't come in that quick. I think we were up to about 3 in the morning. And even though we didn't see him as, he was no Bobby Kennedy or no Gene McCarthy, but, we all perceived, Humphrey to be a better alternative than Nixon. And like even the kid that had voted for Gregory was sitting there kicking himself in the ass, he goes, I shouldn't have done that, or one vote doesn't count, but, we were disappointed, when Nixon was elected. Now, do I know for sure that things would have wound down quicker or been that much different with Humphrey in charge? Can't say that I do, but I think that a lot of people act like, it might have wrapped up more quickly. And I think Humphrey was, distancing himself from Johnson, even during the election and that. And then as we saw Johnson dying only a few years later, I think Johnson's I'm not sure how much influence, any ex-president has, but I think Johnson became a non-factor, as soon as his presidency was over.
I remember when news came that he died, it was almost like, oh, okay, oh, yeah, I remember him.
But he was young. He was only like 73 or something when he died. He died as a young man. Well,
there's
a young man now.
There's tape. I mean, up until Nixon, there was a White House taping system, that taped LBJ's conversations and phone conversations, as well as JFK, and you could find it on YouTube. A phone conversation between LBJ and Everett Dirksen, who was the Senate minority leader. I think we still had a Democratic majority in the Senate. He was a Republican. And the word got, LBJ got intel that Nixon was, and this was right before the election, that Nixon was had sabotaged the Paris peace talks to keep the war going, and LBJ says, Everett, this is treason. And Dirksen says, yep, I know. And but he never went public with it, and then he took that to his grave. But that recording is out there. And I guess war helps win elections, and Nixon supposedly had a secret plan to win the war, but the war was still going strong in 1972, and even though all the Watergate shenanigans turned out not to be necessary, because the anti-war candidate lost anyway. And then it wasn't until Gerald Ford came on board that he actually pulled the plug and said, get out once and for all. But I guess everybody lives during interesting times. My parents and my grandparents, my grandparents lived through the Depression. My grandparents on my father's side lived through World War One. My grandfather was a doughboy. I guess interesting things happened, through everybody's lifetime. But the things that happened to me that were, interesting. I think we lived through really interesting times. This all the social upheaval of 1968 that ended, if you remember, with the Apollo. I forgot which Apollo number orbiting the moon, and it was the first time we had ever seen, the Earth as an orb from outer space. And it was kind of an interesting way to end that year of absolute turbulence the imagery of the planet Earth, and the astronaut read some Bible passage, some inspirational Bible passage. But that was some year, and I'm afraid that we might be in for something like that again. We were getting close. We got close this year, it could happen again, I think the racial tensions in this country have escalated to an extent that I never in my lifetime imagined that we would see this. You think it would just slowly get better, but it seems to have gotten worse over the last 6 years. You can agree or disagree with me on that, that it got worse with the election of an African-American president. Like racists just came out of the woodwork, and the police shootings, which, who knows? Maybe they've always been going on, and we just never saw it on the national news. But there's definitely a seems to be getting worse now. But
I think
fighting back harder. Go ahead.
I think right now there's a huge dichotomy or a huge contradiction that there's so many young people now who, in some ways in their own lives, are a bit colorblind, who, I live 17 miles, west of Boston, pretty much, I guess you'd say pretty close to Lily White Town, but there's this program called METCO that brings black kids from the city into the schools to some degree. And, you know, if girls, if black and like white kids date in high school now, you know, it seems around here, you know, it's totally accepted. But then when a problem comes up, you can get a lot of young white people revert to racism and, oh, the protests are stupid. I mean, we had, I don't know if you know, we had protests again blocking highways just last Friday morning here in Boston. And nobody died, but, I mean, one person was delayed getting to a hospital because of it, one fairly serious person. And that, you know, that always brings up, like, tensions on both sides of it, you know. And there's still a lot of, you know, believe what you want to believe, but go to hell to work and do your job. And, you know, don't block traffic and inconvenience others, where, you know, somebody else will say, you know, well, there's a hell of a lot more inconvenience in a black person's life than getting to work late. You know, which is what I believe. But then again, what I believe somewhat contradicts with my own experience, and I wouldn't say comfort. I'm not in, you know, comfort level. I think the younger people are, you know, the greater comfort level they have with people of different races. And you'll hear like a guy or a girl, you know, just describe somebody as the opposite race and good looking, where it seems like, you know, in our day, you know, some girl might have to say, well, he's good looking for a black guy. You know, she wouldn't be allowed to say, you know, a black boy is good looking. So, I mean, you know, I see a lot of like positive change mixed in with old tensions rising up again, like you said.
Yeah.
Whatever that's worth.
Yeah. I wonder about the, you know, the Martin Luther King holiday. I'm going to use Veterans Day as an example, because I think, well, some schools are open, some schools are closed on Veterans Day. In New Jersey, it's like a whole week in November that usually coincides with Election Day, and it's the teachers' union convention in the last couple days, it's like 3 days in Atlantic City in the days following Election Day. So the schools are closed for like pretty much the whole week. So they're open on Veterans Day, where some schools might be closed on Veterans Day. My father, he lives in a senior citizen apartment complex, and he has a couple of times done this now. They go to the local grade schools, and they talk to the kids about, you know, what was it like, you know, living during the Depression? What was World War II like? What was it like growing up in the 30s? You know, he lived in Atlanta. He moved around a lot, and when he was a kid, he lived in Atlanta in 1939 in the Jim Crow South, and he told the stories of, you know, what it really was like, you know, living in the Jim Crow South. And, you know, not only was it uncomfortable for him to see that treatment of black people there, he himself and his sister, they were considered Yankees, and they were just as unwelcome. And they were from Cincinnati. You know, I don't consider Cincinnati the North. But they considered him Yankees. And then, so this past Veterans Day, he had some of his fellow veterans from his his place. They went to school on Veterans Day, and they talked to the kids, and they had World War II vets, they had Korean War vets, they had Vietnam vets, and those kids, you know, on the days that these geezers come and tell their stories, these kids get a better history lesson in one day than they will for the whole school year. So why not, on Martin Luther King Day, instead of these idiotic things like scrubbing graffiti and raking leaves and planting flowers, and all in the name of Day of Service, have school, but have people that have been involved in the civil rights and civil rights activities come to the schools and tell the kids their stories. Or just have a regular black person go into a class full of white kids. And they'll tell you, it would have benefited me when I was, you know, in the fifth grade or the sixth grade. And talk about what it's like to be black. Tell them what it's like to be stopped by the police for driving your mother's Mercedes in the city. To be stop and frisked. And talk about stuff like that, you know. It's, you know, it's kind of ridiculous, two white guys talking about the black experience, but why not spend Martin Luther King Day doing that? And that's because, you know, this generation now, all they know is it's a day off, and then they try to push this day of service thing, but nobody's doing a day of service. The mayors of the big cities are doing it. I see Mayor Nutter on TV, you know, scrubbing the sidewalk or painting over graffiti and nonsense like that. But, you know, I'd say like half school and invite, there's no shortage of people. If you put the call out for volunteers and say, hey, look, you know, we come in and talk to our classroom about if you have history with as a civil rights activist, let's hear your stories. Were you there at Selma? Did you get sprayed with a fire hose? Did you get attacked by dogs? Or if you're not that old, you know, what's your impression of it? Tell the white kids what it's like be black. Tell them the difference between, you know, being a 13-year-old white boy and a 13-year-old black boy. You know, put the, you know, drill it into them. You know, maybe they might learn something. Okay, I got a caller.
Oh, good. I was going to ask, can we get somebody in there?
Okay, caller. I know you're holding. So I'm going to put you on. We don't screen call, so you could either give us your name or not give us your name, and you can. The floor is yours.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Michael? Is it Michael?
Is this Michael? Yes.
The one and the only from New York City.
Okay.
All right. So you heard. So you heard the two white boys talk about the black experience. How'd they do?
I said nothing. I got to be quite honest. I just got in from outside. I was tied up, and I'm just tuning in.
Okay.
So, and I was going to call in to give a little history of what I know, and it could be along the same areas. But would you be able to fill me in on what was
said? Let me just tell you in a nutshell. We have the Martin Luther King holiday.
That's exactly what I was going to call in about, but go ahead.
Kids know, kids have an idea who he is. But they also know that they get the day off from school. And my thought was, why not have school during that and dedicate school to education about civil rights, and education about the black experience, education about, I don't know if you want to introduce the idea of white privilege to young kids, but see if you can find veterans of the civil rights movement or people who were involved in protests during the civil rights movement, or just have ordinary black people come in to classrooms and talk about the differences between growing up black and growing up white. And it's not just a question of skin color. Talk about race. We don't talk about race. I have coworkers that I'm very friendly with. We don't talk about race. It's taboo in the workplace. Just like we don't talk about religion, and we rarely talk about politics, we don't talk about race. It would be a great opportunity to really talk about race.
Well,
which doesn't get talked about.
All right, let me address that, and then I can give also my input about Martin Luther King Day and how upset I am with right-wingers twisting the meaning of his legacy, what he stood for, and how they use and misuse Mr. King's message to chastise us liberals and progressives from speaking up about the injustices that he himself complained about. But let me address this thing about the school, okay? I am glad that schools were closed on Martin Luther King Day. I understand what you were saying about teaching kids about racism, about what Martin Luther King stood for, but got to be honest with you, they are not, I repeat, they're not going to grasp all of that in one day. In January, there are pretty much two big holidays. Of course, there's New Year's Day, and then there's Martin Luther King Day. I would have thought that it would have been a good, significant history lesson for perhaps a week or two as you're counting down to Martin Luther King Day and really emphasize what that man stood for and how he is an inspiration to everybody, and how there are those who choose to follow his example, like following the example of Jesus, and those who choose not to for their own selfish reasons. Add to that, the month of February, besides Valentine's Day and President's Day, is also known as Black History Month. And I'm sure the legacy of Dr. King will be raised along those lines as well. So the thing is that if you want to teach about Mr. King, the kids are not going to grasp it in one day. You need several days to make sure they understand understand what occurred back then and what is still occurring now, and the fact that it's not about right and left, it's about right and wrong. All right.
Now, I'm thinking, Michael. You know, as a kid, growing up in a predominantly white town, predominantly white school. If there was either a young adult or even a kid my age who had the balls to do it, to come into my classroom and tell us the differences between his life as a black person and my life as a white person, to give us an understanding, not at the Martin Luther King level, but at the very personal day-to-day life level. Dave, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that can be, and I'll look for Michael's input here, but I think that can be a dangerous road to go down, because I think there's so many naive, maybe white and black, naive white people that think black people are so much different than us because, you know, of
skin color,
you know, endured and stuff, and, you know, and the idea that, you know, happiness for a black family, you know, might be a nice house and, you know, good education for the children and a trip away every couple of years in the summer, just like us. I mean, I think some people have trouble realizing how much we're alike rather than how much we're different. And I
You know, I keep telling people how we are alike. We may be different skin colors, okay? But doggone it, you can bet your bottom dollar or your bottom period that we all bleed the same color. You show me one person that bleeds purple or bleeds black or bleeds green or gray, then perhaps I'll stand corrected. But as far as I know,
we all
bleed red.
But what I want to point out, and I think, you know, you guys are pointing out more, is that, you know, we don't only bleed the same, but, you know, we also smile the same, and, you know, we also enjoy
have
a lot
the same emotions.
The same too. You know, I mean, you know, to accentuate the positive, I mean, the last thing, you know, the average black person needs, the average, you know, moderately successful or black person that's not starving needs some white person to come up and apologize for how horrible their life is. You know, and that doesn't accomplish anything, but, you know, that's always the, you know, the image of the bleeding heart liberal, you know. Oh, God, you know, they never think that, you know, black people, you know, are going to have lives just like they are.
And that's, and that's particularly why New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, at a press conference in response to PBA Police Union President Pat Lynch in an earlier statement saying police lives matter like no one else's lives matter, Mr. de Blasio, in concern for his biracial son, said black lives matter too. Black lives matter, white lives matter, police lives matter, citizens' lives matter, all in all lives matter. Now, can I get something off my chest in regards to Republicans, conservatives, and right-wingers that want to misuse Dr. King's name and legacy?
Well, how do they? I want you to do it, but which way do you mean they misuse it? Go ahead, Michael.
Okay. The thing is that they're the ones that are favoring police abuse and racial profiling. They're the ones that when an unarmed person of color is beaten up or killed, they say, oh, he was a thug, he deserved it, not knowing one bit about the person. They're so quick to characterize the blacks as the enemy, as the criminal, as the terrorist, as the sinister, as the enemy, all right? And then when we call them out on that, they're the first to say, well, you got to get off the race thing. Go look at Martin Luther King. He said, not judge by the content, not judge by the skin of the color, on the color of the skin, but on the content of character. But doggone, what the devil you right-wingers are doing when you're automatically condemning the black victims and never, ever, ever look at the possibility and probability and the history of white cops abusing their authority, abusing their positions, and just pretty much violating innocent people of color's lives and safety. You know what I mean? And when it's add to that, they're the ones that say, you shouldn't be talking about police abuse and all that and try to trivialize it. Why don't you talk about black-on-black crimes? Like, blacks are the only ones that commit crimes, and then you can look up in the blogs and find that whites are committing crimes just as much or even worse. So they're the ones playing the race card. But then when we call them out on it, they got the godforsaken audacity to want to cite Martin Luther King's name and try to twist his legacy, whereby when if he was still alive today, he would be chastising them the same way I'm chastising them. All in all, cut the crap already. I'm tired of the cover-ups. The facts speak for themselves that you guys, you right-wingers, have been giving people of color the short end of the stick. You're the ones that pretty much have been committing crimes as much as the black side, and then damn, and I'll be damned if you're the one committing crimes, and then you're going to falsely point the finger towards the black people and make them the fall guys, because that has happened a number of times, too. I'm sick of it. Where the hell is the equal accountability, the equal justice, the equal protection, the truth, and the justice? We're not seeing that. Yes, you know, President Obama, the first African-American elected into the White House and was elected by blacks and whites who actually see the light. But look what happened with him. You got Republicans that wanted to make him a one-term president that's saying that they hope he fails. They never, ever gave him a chance. They always want to throw him under the bus. And likewise, you got politicians and these big money corporations that are using police officers. And then when you know what hits the fan, they throw those cops under the bus. And those cops are just following orders, quote, end of quote. And a lot of those orders, I'm sorry, are racial, are racist, and it's totally inexcusable. And damn, and like I said, you know, God help them, you know, damn them for misusing Dr. King's legacy and his teaching. It's just the same way they misuse the teachings of Jesus Christ. It's outrageous. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Well, I mean,
the only thing I can say is I think in this instance, you're preaching to the choir, but, you know, there's nothing you said that I can disagree with at all. I mean, and I think...
But I know there are others that are listening, so I try to be informative.
Are there others that are listening? You know, I don't know. But I don't think you've upset Jeff much with what you said.
No.
I'm going to try to... I don't have a hard stop at 9, but I'd like to stop as close as we can to 9 so that we can watch the President's State of the Union.
Yeah, I guess that's a big thing.
I have no idea if she listened or not, Jeff, but my kind of long-lost cousin that lives in L.A. that I got in touch with over the last couple of years chastised me for being on against Obama. And then I pointed out that we were going to be finished before he started, and she said she'd listen. She was going to listen,
okay.
But we're not competing with the president.
Yeah, that's why I'd like to wrap up by then.
Can I give one more final quick statement, and that is, if everyone pays attention to the teachings in music from Stevie Wonder or even from Lionel Richie, the one song that he says, Love Will Conquer All, let that be a lesson to everyone that you're never really going to succeed in life unless you learn to love. Love one another and respect one another's rights, then you end up being happy. Why can't we all get along? You know what I'm saying? And on that, I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, Dave, the hour was way too short. Do you have any?
Yeah.
Michael's
music thing always reminds me of this is a bit of my cynicism coming out, but you talked a lot about 1968. And in 1969, in August, there was the Woodstock Music Festival. And even with all that was going on, you know, that was peace and love and wonderful, and that was going to change the world, right?
Yep.
It was only four months later, we had the Rolling Stones concert in Altamont, California, that resulted in killings, you know, and shootings and deaths at it. And I thought that was you know, an apt metaphor for a lot of time and a lot of life, you know. The dream lasted 4 months, man.
Yeah, the mythology, of Woodstock is not much different than the mythology of Camelot. You know, it was a time, but
was a brief shining time or some expression they used.
Yeah, but it never really happened. Except in the minds, you know, the myth makers. That's a good way to end it, and we can continue this another time. I'm gonna be out of town next week. I don't know if Heidi and Dave are gonna do the show without me, but they'll keep you posted. I'll be offline after Saturday.
Where are you going? You on a cruise?
Yeah, we're going to the Western Caribbean. We're flying Saturday, and we're leaving Sunday morning and coming back the 31st and flying home the 31st. We'll be home Saturday night with no email, no phones, just my Kindle. Load my Kindle up with books. I load my iTunes up with music. And might hop onto some of the attractions for some sightseeing. Last time we were there, I saw some ruins. I think it was, I don't know, I get the Mayans and the Aztecs mixed up in Tulum. But I'd like to get a...
Tulum's Mayan. I think, I'm pretty sure Tulum's Mayan. Near Chichen Itza,
the ship docks in Cozumel, and then you get a ferry from Cozumel to the Mexican mainland, and then they take this an hour bus ride into Tulum.
Well, this has been so much sweetness and love that, you know, I'll throw a little gas on the fire by saying you'll be home in time to see Bill Belichick win the Super Bowl.
If I was, with his deflated football.
There you go.
You know, if they vacate his wins, that means the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2005 or
2004. Yeah, if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his asshole.
You're speechless.
If a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his ass all the time. Yeah.
Yep. Nothing will happen there. Anyway, thanks a lot for calling in. We always like to have you on. And
it's a shame we didn't get more people to call in. But I don't know if we were either boring to death, or some people think, you know, they're not worthy to speak,
which has never
been one of my problems.
A lot of people are reluctant to call in, so you know, I got to come up with a name for you and Michael. You know, how Howard Stern has the Whack Pack.
Yeah.
I don't want to call you guys the Whack Pack, but we'll come up with a name.
Okay, if anybody wants to know a little bit more about me, though, I am individually profane. I am individually crude. I am not a Howard Stern fan.
I used to like Howard Stern, but he got boring.
I find a big difference between acceptable private and acceptable public behavior. Maybe I'm older than people think I am in that way, that things I think are appropriate to do sitting around with five people you know very well and to do on the air and stuff, I just don't think they're the same.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I mean, to me, it just got boring. It got to be the same thing every day. So I stopped listening to it a while ago.
I'm keep going on about this, people listening. If you know me personally and you did listen tonight, make a mention on Facebook or send me a text or something. I'd just be curious. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Good night.
I'm hanging up.